Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Final Word Show. Liverpool Football Club are the champions of Europe. Amazing, right? You know, we normally don't get drunk on this show, but we're the champions of Europe, so we're going to. Guys, come in. We've got all the staff who've made it in today. Paul, we're going to do this in memory of Chris Pajak. We're going to do this in memory of Simon Fletcher, who's currently on a plane back from Madrid, joined by Ben Kelly, by Adam Rowe, and by Ross Chandley for the show itself, which will come in due course. We've got Nicholas sitting back. Nicholas, you don't want to... Chelsea won the Europa League. You can have a little sip for that as well, like.
We went a bit wider than I expected. But I thought we were going to stand up, so that's why the flaming's a bit weird.
Oh, it's fine. Hey, sound amazing. So, Adam, how you feeling?
I feel all right. You feel all right? I'll be honest with you. I've never been happier in my life, but everything hurts from the amount of jumping up and down and singing and. My voice hurts, my throat hurts, my legs hurt, my feet hurt, my back hurts. When Origi scored the winner, I fell down two rows in the Olympia. I watched in the Olympia. I had my top off and I was lying in a big puddle of ale. So I'm in a lot of pain, but it's all worth it.
Oh, well, absolutely. Ross, how are you doing?
Numb. It still feels a bit of a dream, doesn't it? Like, it's taken me 2 days to watch back content, watch the game back, go to the parade, and it's like you're in a massive bubble of... European champions.
You got a cup of tea there, Bailey? Is that your cup? Oh, you got some already. Sounds good. Any people passing it down the way?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Jack did the honourable thing and passed it down the line. Sounds. Tom, how are you?
My voice hurts.
Yeah.
I've been drinking non-stop for 2 days, and I will do it for the next week and for the next month and forever because champions
are fucking Europe.
Yes, we are.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
All the best, right? Get back to work. No, you will not take the fucking bottle, would you?
That was nice.
Yeah, it was. Ben, you were over there with me.
Aye.
It honestly hasn't sunk in. For me?
No, not at all. It's funny, Ross said there, it felt like a dream, because for me, obviously people know, obviously the vlog's on YouTube now and all that, but I was in and out in 24 hours, so between getting up at 3 a.m. Saturday and getting back in bed at 6 a.m. Sunday, didn't sleep, I did it all in a day. So I got 6 hours sleep, woke up at like 12 p.m. yesterday afternoon, and it genuinely all just did feel like a dream because just in that, I did so much in that 26 hours or whatever. And suddenly I woke up, I was like, yeah, that was the last time I was in bed. None of that had happened yet. Yeah. So it did really feel like, honestly, like a dream. And I messaged my dad, obviously he came up for the bus parade yesterday, and it's two words. I feel so lucky to have had that experience, and I just feel so proud to have that experience and to have watched the team do it. And you know, I'm still speechless. Really, I was speechless in the game, trying to talk to a camera, you know, in the ground at midnight Spanish time on Saturday, and I'm still speechless now. You know, just trying to sum up how I feel. You know?
Similar to me. Me and my dad got there a day before, but we fits so much stuff into that space of time. Like I was saying, Adam, I got in this morning and put the game on. I'd watched the highlights on the night at like 3 o'clock in the morning when I finally finished editing and what have you. And I didn't get to, because it cut off the second the last chance happened, did the highlights cut off, so I didn't get to see all the stuff. But it's been one of those things. It's a constantly constantly refreshing Twitter. Every time I refresh Twitter, another gem appears, and maybe it's just a photograph, or maybe it's a video clip, or it's just someone summing it up really nicely in a few words. I've never experienced.
I've had the exact same thing, lad. Yesterday, I went to parade, and I was so drunk at the parade, I also limited from the night before, and I was like, I just need to start again. That's the only way I'm going to feel good here. And then when I got back after the parade, I just got in bed. I mean, Mrs. got in later on, and I woke up again, and I was just on my phone scrolling, ignoring, and she was like, why are you scrolling? You've seen all that stuff already. Just pay me some attention. I was like, no. If I refresh it, there's going to be something else. And my Mrs. hates footy. Like, not doesn't really care about it. She actively despises football. But literally, there was no one else for me to show, so I just kept going, hey, look at this one. Hey!
That Klopp counter system's amazing.
He was bladded on the back of that bus.
Bladded, absolutely. But I did the same, because I got back in at, 9 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, English time, and went home, and my wife was there with the kids and what have you, and I was sat there doing the services on my phone, and she's kind of said, you need to pay me some attention. I was like, I'm sorry, you need to understand. I've had 2 hours kip, and this is something else. And then, she, to her credit, she loves the story, and she loves all the past and the big stuff around it. So when I was showing her the clips, and stuff, she's pissing herself, and then she come to parade with me and all that kind of stuff. But Ross, where you watched the Rome in the end?
Yeah, I had to change some plans around, but the build up was a bit mad. It never really hit me till about an hour before the game that it was happening, and I don't know why. It wasn't like there was a little bit of confidence, not cockiness. I think is a fine line between that and arrogance. But then as soon as it got into the game, I was just so excited. Got smashed again, and then obviously because it's my fucking job, I've spent the majority of my weekend on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, just soaking up all the content. And I think because the parade was the next day, you still miss out on some of the stuff from the match before that you're seeing, basically like Henson and his dad and stuff like that. And I know, I've gone back to that quite a few times. Just go, Jesus Christ, stop me.
That's the thing. I saw the Henderson video with his dad, and I thought, is he going to come over and give him a hug? Great. He didn't give his dad a hug. No. Hugged.
Yeah, they hugged.
Like, that was a proper.
It's the grip on the back of the fucking eyes. Go, oh my God.
Yeah, and like, it was a
proper. Like one of them videos where like a soldier comes home from Afghanistan.
Yes.
Yeah. But like he hasn't told his family. Yes.
honestly, like, absolutely just. That like, proper got me in that day. The things that I hadn't seen so much of the bits around it because, you know, I was in the upper tier and I was filming that. And there's part of me that I was so on it. I've worked 10 years for this, you know, and Liverpool won one trophy in the time we've been doing Red Men, and me and Chris went to the pub where we watched us win a European Cup and lose a European Cup and got bladdered. And I don't think we put a video up until like a day or whatever later, and it was one video. We didn't milk it in any way, shape or form. Is this? I'm like, I am getting every second of this, and I'm, you know what I mean. And I'm gonna put every fucking video out under the face of the earth because I've had so much shit in doing it along the way. But when I finally saw a couple of the bits and seeing the video clips, and you're seeing like Virgil van Dijk, just the full time whistle goes and he just starts crying. Yeah. And like, I'd see Henderson collapse into the floor.
Have
and
you
all
seen
this
that
kind
video
of
from when Origi scores, what van Dijk does?
Yeah, we saw that.
He just goes to run and then he's like, I haven't got it in me. I'm just going to lie on the centre circle.
Just absolutely, absolutely incredible. And you were in the Olympia, what was it like?
It was that boss night we're promoting it. Mm-hmm. And so like they had the musician on before it, and it was literally just bouncing from the moment they opened doors. They opened at 5. And for 3 hours, people screaming their heads off, singing. It was like, I can't think of a better place other than being in the ground to have watched it. They put a fucking show on them lads, you know. And like, we were on the upper circle. It's like a theatre in there, isn't it? And they'd had to cordon off the front 2 rows of the theatre in case people fell off.
Yeah.
And it's a good job they'd done that because we were on what became the first row, what was the third row. And when Origi scored, I had my top off swinging it round my head and then he put it in and I just fell over and I was lying in a puddle of ale for like 2 minutes until my mate like dragged me out because they're like, where's Adam gone? I'm like, I'm down here, I can't get up. Sticky for the rest of the night, just 2-hour-old beer up my back.
Absolutely quality. Well, we'll get into the game now, just because we're going to be putting this out on YouTube for everyone to watch, to listen to, because look, the job is yours. We need to revel in this. We've got a sponsor, and it's threadsforreds.com. I'm wearing the Trabs tee, the updated Trabs tee. They did one in the build-up to the final, and they've got a new one now, which has got the six times, the places we've been and where we won them. So, yeah, Madrid, Istanbul, Rome, Paris, London, and Rome again. Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. Get over to threadsforreds.com and you can order these. And there's a couple of amazing designs as well. And Ross is looking dead sexy in his.
Also available in black.
Also available in black. Brilliant. The game then, Ben. The game was a game of footy that led to all of this.
an absolute blur.
Oh, yeah.
Swear to God. We were so geared up for it. Yeah. Ross mentioned it earlier about this notion of confidence, and that was in all the build-ups, the build-up podcast and the build-up show. We talked about, it wasn't cockiness or arrogance, but there was a confidence that Liverpool were going to do this. I did not believe for a single second that 22 seconds into the final of the Champions League we would have a penalty, but we did. And I think I'm watching it back, Sadio Mane might even buy it deliberately.
Aiming. Yeah, I think he's aiming for it because I don't know what else he's doing. Like the arms up and he sees it, and I think he goes like nobody's making a run or anything. So unless
Hendo's
he's shooting, Hendo, but it's
Hendo's
not
making a run from deep.
Oh right, okay, but I think he's aiming for the arm. And to be fair, I think it is a penalty, but I think it's one of them where you wait it when it goes against you. And, you know, I think it is a bit harsh, but I think it is a penalty.
I don't think, I'll be honest with you, especially with the rules that are coming in now, which is if it touches your hand at all, it's a pen, then it's a pen. And that's going to happen more and more, players just volleying it at defenders' arms. But you can take this back 10 years. If a defender's got his arm up here for 5, 6, 7 seconds, it's his own fault.
It's like, because he's pointing, I don't even know what he's pointing at, but it's like he's goading Mane to have a shot.
Yeah.
And Mane goes, that's an interesting arm you've just put out at an unnatural angle, you might say there, Moussa. Go on, I'll have a go at that. And whether he does it deliberately or not, I agree. It's one of those situations where VAR was never gonna chuck that off.
No.
Because it's ultimately the problem with VAR. It goes, well, you watch it 7 times and his arm's up, it goes, yeah, well, that's definitely it. And, you know, I'll be honest, I said it in my vlog, I nearly fainted. Like, I was screaming, and I had a proper, like,
head rush.
Honestly, and I sat back into my seat, and I was, like, I nearly completely went, because... Well, but maybe, you know, but it, the fact that I'd had a few cans during the time and I was a little bit dehydrated by that point and all that kind of stuff, and I'd missed dinner. And the point was, the whole thing, you were watching it come true.
Yeah.
Like this, the confidence thing, to stride into that game and have that penalty in the within a minute, it was vindication for everything we've been saying.
It was, and I was saying to these before we started today, you know, there's no regrets looking back on this game now. But I think we might have absolutely battered Tottenham if we hadn't scored so early.
Yeah.
We started so lively. Yeah. The players were so clearly up for it. I know we only seen 20 seconds of it before this happened, but I think that happens. And then Tottenham's game plan was quite clearly, slow this down. If we go toe-to-toe with Liverpool, they're going to bounce us all over the place. Yeah. And they didn't have a team talk to be able to change that. So what happened was Tottenham go 1-0 down, and then their plan is to slow the game down.
Yeah.
And Liverpool go 1-0 up, and they're like, well, hang on, our job's to slow the game down.
We'll now as well.
Yeah. And then we're like, hang on, we're supposed to be defending a 1-0 lead here, but they don't seem to be trying to chalk our goal off. What do we do here?
Yeah.
It led to a very weird first half.
It was very much so. I mean, Ross, the penalty itself, I mean, it was the longest wait in the universe to watch the most inevitably toeyed penalty you've ever seen in your life.
There was a couple of moments of the game that were like that, seemed to go on forever. It was obviously a penalty. It was still in disbelief, I think, of just exchanging eye contact with people going, is this happening, isn't it? It's like, you know, you said the build-up, you wait for it. You don't no one in this room ever thought we'd get a goal inside 2 minutes.
No.
Well, it was like Istanbul in reverse to some extent. Yeah. You know, like how they just stroked, and all of a sudden you're a goal down, and you're like, oh shit, how's that happened? It was weird to be on the other end of it.
You're saying preparing the teams for like every eventuality, and unprepared for that, but as a fan, you can't prepare yourself for like scoring a goal in 2 minutes. Then it's like the most intense game ever. If I'm all right with defending the lead, but not for 88 minutes in a Champions League final. Yeah. Like I've shown my hand marks still in the fucking sofa at home. Fucking hell.
No, but
the penalty itself is like, that's how motivated takes penalties, isn't it?
I mean,
it was a bit of a shit penalty, and he's fucking lucky.
Lloris should have saved it.
Yeah.
If you watch it from
too early.
The camera angle from behind the goal, like it goes like there.
Yeah.
And is that he still
he moves sand out the way? Yeah, yeah. It's like, whoa.
But what a moment for Salah.
Yeah.
After last year.
Redemption.
Do you know what I mean? 2 minutes in.
There was no way he wasn't taking that pen.
No. Even if Milner was on, I think he'd have took that pen.
I don't think he would have done. I don't think he'd have allowed. But the point is,
you know,
I think when it comes down to it, like Firmino's taking pens, I wouldn't have wanted him taking it. Fabinho's a penalty taker. You know, Fabinho's an actual penalty taker. I know he's not been on it for us as such, but you're right, the redemption story for Mo Salah there. There was no way, regardless of the situation, he wasn't going to have a go at Italy. It's,
must have been horrible for Tottenham fans. Because, like, I mean, so the reverse of it, you know, we talked about Istanbul, but obviously they built up the day. They probably didn't expect to win, as we say, but like they've been building on all this. And then 2 minutes in, they'll be like, well, here we go then. So they're 1-0 down already. Like, obviously, we can look back now and obviously didn't feel for them at the time. But like a little bit is like, well, you know, already you're fucking 1-0 down. And obviously, you're having to work yourself back into the game. But no, it was just...
I think it's interesting, the game itself, because Ross Adam referenced it. Like, the first half was weird. The lack of rhythm showed, and it just, I think it helped Liverpool ultimately, because Liverpool's game plan, I think, might have been to nick a goal early on, and then look, you get 1-0 up and you sound, and all of a sudden we've done it without really having to do anything. It was like, okay, cool, operation, keep the ball, we're all right with this.
Didn't do very well with that operation.
But then it mercifully needed the day. The amount of unpressed kicks out of play. The 3 week gap though, it made it, I think it showed in both teams, and I'm kind of glad, because I think if that had been a Spanish team, you know, because their season unfinished a week later, didn't it? They might have been a little bit sharper or what have you. It impacted both sides, because yes, we managed to get Firmino on the pitch. They managed to get Kane on the pitch and Winks on the pitch, but the whole enterprise was a bit disjointed. It wasn't, and it's free flowing.
I think it was that and nerves, obviously. But I think that's where experience from last year comes into play, because the majority of our side played last year in that final, so we had the better room. But I think it comes back to the goal of like us building up for this game, and then
fixture, Mike.
Us building up for the game and just to go one goal up within 2 minutes. Of shock, and going, oh shit, like this wasn't meant to happen. And then that comes back to the nerves again of, you know, trying to build up a rhythm. Like our passing was terrible, but Tottenham were just more shit.
Yeah, no, that's right. I just didn't get it. I didn't get to like soak in the game. You're meant to like you have 5 minutes where the ball's getting played around, and you're going, oh my god, I'm in a European Cup final. And it's just, we're 1-0 up. Yeah. We're 1-0 up and two minutes gone. The thing is, then it goes two ways. That we automatically then add something to lose, so that adds the pressure on as well. But the good thing is, really, it was a terrible, the middle bit's fucking terrible, but it was, I've seen that Liverpool performance so many times this season. It's like we'd have played that way, I think, at 0-0. If we'd been 0-0 after 15 minutes, I think we'd have played exactly the same way, because I think Jürgen's larger game plan was, we're going to be fitter, we're going to be stronger, we've got more options off the bench. If this is 0-0 with 20 minutes to go, you'd fancy us to take it there.
To be honest, I didn't expect a goal that early, and I spent most of the time in the fan park telling Lauren and Amy, you know, I think I wouldn't be surprised if it's 0-0 after an hour and all this, and then we went and got a penalty after 40 seconds. But I always felt as if we needed a tight game in terms of do what we do all season, keep a clean sheet, make sure that we win. What I thought it was going to be 1-0, like that was my score prediction, because I just felt that Tottenham, despite, they needed to go, they didn't want to go toe-to-toe exactly, but they'll have wanted a mad game where they win 3-2, and we needed to keep it tight and just make sure that we did the job and made it the most, again, use the experience, but did the most professional job possible. And I'm not completely convinced that we controlled the game quite as well as we wanted to, but we defended very well.
But we controlled it enough. You know, if they'd been dead sharp, Adam, it might have been a difference. We'd have probably had to ramp it up, and maybe we would have been caught out. But it was a shit game. But we were also glorious in that, because it didn't look like it was a shit game, because we were trying loads of amazing stuff, and it wasn't coming off. We were clearly, as you said, we were clearly happy with the situation, because how many times we just went back to goalie, and how many times we went in possession and someone went, settle down, calm it down.
The slowest Champions League final of all time down.
But these are not kids that were the brash kids that went into the final against Madrid last season hoping to blow everyone away. We were the big boys. We were their favourites. Yeah. We're the elite. Yeah. All of a sudden, and that's what Barcelona would do, and that's what all these great sides would do in that regard. The glorious shithouse time wasting we were doing in that first half was just a joy to behold.
Yeah, like I say, I think largely it comes down to the fact that both teams were so confused by that early goal, and I do genuinely believe Tottenham's game plan was to slow it down. And maybe the exact same plan you think we had was get it to the last 20 minutes and try and make a goal. From our point of view, we look at it and go, we're great in the last 20 minutes. A lot of Tottenham's goals have come in that last 10, 15 minutes this season. Yeah. So maybe that's when they fancy their chances as well. They want to slow it down, take Liverpool's sting out the game, because they know, like, Liverpool can make a fast start and you'd be 3-0 down by half an hour then.
Yeah.
Like Man City were at Anfield last year. They know that we're capable of that. So they're like, right, let's slow everything down. They go 1-0 down, but there's no one on the pitch to go, let's change this around. And then I think our game plan is if we get an early goal, we slow it down. And then you've got two teams just trying to play it between the defenders and the goalie and not really going on. So for a neutral, I've spoke to a lot of, like, and I'm sure most of them, like, bitter United and Everton fans go, oh, it was a shit final. It's like, do you know what? For you lot, it was. For us, no, it absolutely fucking wasn't.
First thing Nicola said when she walked in was like, terrible game. Terrible game. I had loads of people saying that to me. I've seen Andy Wright, the fans of other clubs, largely saying, that was the worst final ever. And I was like, we've already played in the best final ever. We've played in the best Champions League final ever. You're never going to top that.
Yeah.
So I'd rather us just win a game football. So many Liverpool's European Cup wins are terrible. Like the Real Madrid one's a terrible game of football. You know, apart from the first one, which is there's quite a lot of goals in it, they're all tense, cagey, close affairs where the best team is just a bit more professional and a bit more, you know, a bit more about them, and they get over the line. That's what that ended up being.
I am hoping that next year, I'm hoping that we get there again. I'm quite confident we're going to go far in next year's competition, because I don't think there's a team on the planet at the minute that can live with a second leg at Anfield. No.
But the teams as well, look at it. I mean, Real Madrid going to need a rebuild this summer. So, you know, yeah, they'll go out and they'll buy amazing players and it'll be a lot easier for the likes of them. Bayern Munich are going to need a rebuild. Barcelona are going to starting to need a rebuild as well. You know, Coutinho's going to go to PSG. Suarez is that's probably Suarez's last top level season, really. Messi at some point will stop being a fucking alien and start to slip a little bit and all that kind of stuff. Like, so that's an interesting point. But Ross,
what I was saying though is I hope UEFA move it a week or 10 days earlier.
Yeah,
season because of the Euros, I imagine.
Yeah, so does Chris.
Yeah, so does Chris. He won't be making that mistake. Well, he maybe will make that mistake again. Chris is convinced he's a jinx. And having now watched it in a Euro camp in Paris.
He
will be going there next year as well.
Yeah, we booked Istanbul today.
I'll pay for my dad to go this time. I'll be paying Chris to go to, paying for Chris to go to Euro camp. Sorry, Chris, not really. You can come. You need to come. I'm so gutted he wasn't there. So gutted. Ross, I haven't thought about fractions since GCSE. I worked this game out in fractions, looking at the clock and going, that's a tenth of this game gone. that's a quarter of the game gone. And I was going through it every life. I was working out what that is. That's how I occupied myself with the middle section of it being a terrible game of football. But I have never, like, because we had that 1-0 lead, I was on the countdown to the final whistle from 2 minutes in.
Go 1-0 up, get to 15 minutes, let it calm down, get to half an hour, and then I think we had a chance just before half time. It's like, oh, we could go 2-0 up here, that'd be dead sound, that will help me a little bit.
Yeah.
And you carry on doing that throughout the whole game. But I think we did quite well, considering that we talk about, like, Liverpool's attack, and I think that's still a thing from last season of how gung-ho we are and how many goals we scored. But, like, our best thing now is our defence. Mm. And, like, this is all so calm. Like, Joel Matip, again, we mentioned it before off camera, like, for a Champions League final, he wasn't in last season because obviously Lovren started. He stepped up again. Like, Kane did nothing but that sort of his.
It surprised me, and it shouldn't have surprised me because this is how they played with Kane against us early in the season. They go very long, they go very high and very direct to Harry Kane. And then, look, he's a brilliant centre forward, but he's only as tall as he is. and he's only as powerful as he is.
And it's not as tall as powerful as Virgil van Dijk.
Exactly. And to be honest, he's not.
You know, so they put people on Joel Matip, and Joel Matip used to be, my worry used to be, he's not strong in the air, he's not strong in a challenge, he's not on the front foot, and he's improved on all those things, so you can fire up to Harry Kane.
Every time they went long, we used to play, in fact, we play like when Gareth Bale played for Spurs and we put two men on him. We'd like sandwich, and we did this for Lukaku, and we tried it with Ben Teke back in the day and all this kind of stuff. We always struggled against that. That was Liverpool's biggest weakness, big soft centre through the middle. Every time a team kicks the ball off the ground against us, I just sit back and just wait for us to counter-attack, because if you get it over Fabinho, which you're probably not going to because he's 12 foot tall, you've got
the
Virgil van Dijk
and the Eiffel Tower playing centre-back.
Absolutely. Joel Matip's bigger than Virgil van Dijk, and he's there, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, you're not going to target Virgil, you're just going to target the even taller Joel Matip. Go ahead, good luck, all the best.
Yeah,
it was one dead early on, wasn't there, on Harry Kane, where the ball was thrust forward and Virgil's came in. It was like an early sort of laying down a mark. He just came in and went whack. And I wonder whether, because Harry Kane, I remember us having the conversation after the Anfield League game, is normally like, if he's not getting any joy out of that sort of situation, he is normally a bit more intelligent, comes and shows the ball a bit more. And just whether that was down to his fitness, maybe down to the conditions and
maybe
stuff,
just
why we didn't see as much as that.
Maybe it's a bit of hubris from Harry Kane, though, to be honest. Like, because he's that big stage for him, he publicly declared himself fit. It's Harry Kane's time to shine. Made himself fit in time for the final, and he probably just wanted to be as near the goal as possible because he wants to be the guy who defines it. But Adam, he was fucking shit.
He was fucking shit. Of course he was. He hasn't played in months. His team hasn't played in weeks. So, and they're all knackered. They were, like he was saying before, cramping after 60 minutes.
That's watching that first half. Like Son went to the Asian Games or whatever in the summer off the back of off the back of a busy season and all that kind of stuff. They were wrecked from half an hour into that game.
And we weren't. That was a big difference, is that we weren't very good at football on Saturday, but we were really good at running loads. And if anyone's seen Coach Carter, you'll know that is the start of a very good championship winning team, is being able to outrun your opponent. Kane was shit, Dele Alli was worse. Just two of their star players just massively didn't show up.
It's also
very hard to play against this Liverpool defence and with that goalie. We're another level, so you've got to be at the top of your game.
They tried to get the ball in early over the top, and they tried to test Trent, Ross, and all of those things they failed in. There was one moment early on where Dele Alli was running down Trent, and I think it's like he might actually be a little bit faster than Trent here, but he recovered, he dealt with it, and he sensibly puts it out for a throw in. Again, 20-year-old lad, the intelligence. That was a situation where this is a boy who's been here before. A year ago, he might go back to the keeper. No point. Don't worry about it. What are they going to do for a throw-in? They're only going to end up crossing the ball into the box. And what happens when you cross the ball into the box? Well, your big bastard Brazilian goalkeeper comes and claims it, or your even bigger bastard centre-halves come and let the fucking thing out. You know, and so the level of composure and the fact that all of a sudden there was no weak links. People have been trying to target Trent all season, and he's gotten better.
And that'll be something that they worked on as well, because they would have known that they're going to get change out of Matip and Van Dijk. But I think he's just so switched on. It comes back to last season for me. You know, you've been through that. You know, we know how much they wanted it. The moment they had with Son, when Son was through 1-on-1, and he's just pelting it back, and like, it was just dead cool. And like, for a split second, as a fan, you go, oh no, it's fine.
No, but that was the genuine biggest moment. I think was you saying that was the when he basically wins man of the match in that moment. He's chasing back, and you think, oh god.
I meant the Trent one.
Oh, so
Trent's bombing back, and sometimes he just sticks his leg out. He's 20 years of age, Champions League final, he gets past him, he's through.
Other teams in the top six all season, and going back into last season, have targeted Trent in those big games. He's always been the one that people try and get at. And if anything, they've probably done us a favour because they've just made him loads better defensively. Because in those big games, he's been targeted. He's had to have stepped up and gone, right, who am I playing today? Leroy Sané. Sound, I'll have to try and pocket him. Marcus Rashford again. He done me last year. He's not getting past me today. And then Heung-min Son and Dele Alli, and they've all done it, and he'll become a much better player.
We forget sometimes, because we're adults, sort of, that you're used to people staying the same. Whereas kids, and look, 20's not a kid, but you know, you when you're younger, I see it with my lad. You know, you do something with them once, and they might be shit at it. Let them sleep on it and try it again, and they'll be better at it.
It's Crash Bandicoot.
Crash Bandicoot. Mario Odyssey. Honestly, it's a standard. But you do that when you're younger. You do the more stuff you experience, you're more pliable. You're more sponge. Like you soak these things up. And I think you're dead right. Since Alexander Arnold was supposed to be our weak link there, so much so that they tried it on Robbo. They switched over to they switched Son over as well. To try and double up on Robbo for a bit to see if they get any chases. He's having a laugh. Oh, I love it. But it's all the best boys could ever play. Not getting in there at 10, you're not getting it.
Try it on Van Dijk now.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. The one player who wasn't certain, we've mentioned him a couple of times, Ben, Son. He's fantastic, isn't he?
Yeah, he's class, and you know, Tottenham have had so much joy out of him this season, and more as well. You know, I think in hindsight, look, if you're going into the game and Harry Kane can play, I think it is a no-brainer to try and start Harry Kane.
The game, it was brilliantly obvious.
Yeah.
Because he's their star man, yeah, he's one of their own. I heard that song so many times, so quietly, so terribly sung around Madrid. You knew they were going to fall into that trap of making them slower and more predictable by putting Harry Kane.
But I was I would have been a lot more frightened of Lucas Moura if he had started. And when he came on, I was a bit like, well, here we go, this is it. Then they're throwing the kitchen sink at it, particularly because they took Winks off for Moura, and they're okay, they're just going to go for it now. But he couldn't really get into the game anyway. What were we talking about? What was the question?
two sips of Carver. The Son and how brilliant
Son. So Son, you know, obviously, he is so bright, and he is clinical as well. We saw in the Man City quarter-final that, you know, he gets the goal to put them 2-1 up, I think. You know, and he is class in that sense. But he has that moment, doesn't he, where he meets his match with about 15 minutes to go. And I've said this, you know, this is where Van Dijk wins Man of the Match, where he is quick and he goes right past it. And Van Dijk just goes, oh, no, no. And he makes that tackle, doesn't have to stretch for it, he just steps
doesn't
up with
go
another
to
yard
ground.
Pace,
I've been
just,
so yeah. used to watching Martin Skale and Jamie Carragher and, you know, everyone in between.
Even Dejan Lovren.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely Dejan Lovren.
Stefan Ancho.
Exactly. All of them lads and Virgil's just like, and there was a moment, and I think, if it had been a step longer, Son might have been away from him. But as it is, sticks brings his foot across, knocks it away, corner.
What's
then,
the problem?
Then just doesn't even breathe, not even breathing heavy. Just walks back and takes his position, looks around, yeah, cool, everything's fine.
First time he had to sprint all season.
I think there's two, isn't there? The Wolves game, and that's it. You think about our centre half, have to accelerate twice.
From Van Dijk's point of view, last time he played Spurs, he had two of them run against him, one's a piece of piss for him.
Yeah!
Where's the other one?
But the thing is, you know, that's the thing. He rates Son. He knows how dangerous. He knows he's a good player in that situation. Best players in the world relish going up against the best players in the world, and that was
just
where
just making like an inconvenience for him. What are you doing?
I think it says so much about how far we've come as a team that this Tottenham side is genuinely a really, really good team, and I think Son is the only one I'd have. To add to our squad.
Watching the game back, I did have that thought of, and I like a lot of their players. I think they're very, very good. You know, that I thought Danny Rose was shit as well, but I think he's a fantastic left back. Trippier is a fantastic right back. Moussa Sissoko has bizarrely become really, really, really good. Defender's good. The keeper's a bit below average, but he's better than Mignolet. He's a good goalkeeper, isn't he? But when I was coming toward the end of that game, I was watching it going, I know Harry Kane's world class as a centre forward, but I genuinely feel as though Son is their one guy. He's their one fella. And I was like, I recognise this because I've seen us be this for so long, where you've got loads and loads of good lads, but you'd have one who's just better than the rest. Whereas now I look at our squad and I'm like, you could make a case for three or four players being our best player, and you could make a case for all of those players being the best in that position in the world at the same time, which is the difference in that. I said earlier, Ross, I think we wanted this game to go to the last 20. I think we were fine. I think we should have been better. I think Klopp wanted us to be better. You don't deliberately misplace passes. You know, it's as simple as that. But you could see how our game plan at work. it just wasn't clearly evident. And if you watch shortened highlights, Dan, you'll never see it. We had two, three at least opportunities to counter-attack in that last 20. And it was the ball before the ball let us down. Origi had a couple where he just, one for Mane, one for Salah, where he totally fluffs the pass. We were clearly, it started to play into our hands. They brought Moura on. They went for it. They threw the kitchen sink at it. And you felt as though all we needed was one moment of precision and the game was going to be ours.
Yeah, and that comes from this whole season that we've played. We've adapted to whatever situation we've used. And we can take different situations, whatever happened in that game, and use them. You know, taking that experience of this season, go, actually, we'll keep possession of the ball, like you said, and pass it around. It never happened just because we were poor at passing. But again, like, go on a lot. Or Sam will just counter-attack. He said, we've still got the pressure. We can do that now. We've got a good defence. We've got a good goalkeeper. And often, like, when we were on a counter and there wasn't a pass before the pass, well, Trent got through. We just stopped passing to people. Then Robert got through when he passed someone else. And, you know, Spurs had no choice but to go for it, and they left themselves exposed, yeah. Which we're fine with.
Exactly. That was the thing. They were inexperienced at that level. And they were a goal behind. And you know, and as much as you say, when Ben, you say when Moura comes on, you're like, oh, here we go, and you're dead right. The second they brought Llorente on, I was like, this is it. This is all they've got now. Mm. They've got this hope. They start lumping things in, and again, I don't fear that anymore. That being said, the last 20 minutes was nervous as fuck. Yeah. And they have opportunities. And in it, again, it's easy to say with hindsight, but at the time, it did feel as though an equaliser was coming. You know, if it had been the roles reversed, we'd have said it's coming.
Yeah, it's on the way. I mean, Dele Alli had a chance, didn't he, where he, like, tries to hook it into the top corner, which I believe fooled everybody on the telly. It looked like it was going in.
Still
a bit
well, to be honest.
I don't think I unclenched.
No. Until about 3 o'clock in the morning, where it'd be first a little sip of whiskey, like. But
Moura had the chance on the corner that then Son headed wide, but he was offside. Son had a good effort. That was the big one, the Son chance that ended up being offside. It was the Moura one in the middle that he scuffs. So Son has the one. Son has the shot where Alisson makes a good save. Moura has to connect with that better. Yeah. That was the big chance for them. And then Eriksen has the free kick, which is. Like, it's a good save, but this is how good Alisson is, because he can make that save look well better.
Yeah.
Because it's going in, but the way he moves his feet to then move himself and move his whole body to then be able to use his hands, if he wants to, he can make that good look good for the cameras. He can be stretching right out here and tip that wide, but he doesn't have to because he's that good.
He's 6'4" and he's dead agile.
Yeah.
Like, he's so agile. He's not like a lumbering goalkeeper in any way, shape or form. So that's where the free kick's going. It would have been a moment of genius if Eriksen had put it in the near post, but it's actually almost impossible to do that from that angle to get it up and down. Yeah. But also then you've got to loop it if you go in near post there, which means that Alisson's got time to react one way or the other. It's basically a shit. It's got to be 3 feet higher with more dip on it to have a chance of going in that top bin. But I don't want to take anything away here from Alisson Becker, Adam, because I said this in my post-match video. I've said it all over the place. My dad had this conversation. He said he didn't want to denigrate the performances of everyone by putting it all on Alisson and make it seem as though Spurs battered us somehow, but they didn't. But Alisson Becker makes 3 or 4 saves in that final 20 minutes of the game and wins us the final, ultimately, because if even one of them goes in or he has a spill and there's crosses he takes, there's clearing his lines, he's right on the edge of his 18-yard box, picking through balls off. If he has even one flinch, they're in, and it could be a completely different game. We've spent 65.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
£5 million. We broke the record, transfer record for a goalkeeper, and he's effectively won us the sixth European Cup.
Yeah. I've sort of run out of superlatives for him because it's a similar thing with Van Dijk. He's not just brilliant, you've got to compare him to what we've had before him.
Yeah.
That's the big thing. He's not just a fucking unbelievable goalie. We've had absolute dog shit for years in the same position. So, like, those saves he makes, like, all the Spurs chances are half chances. There's none where you go, they absolutely should have scored there. Moura should have done better, but you can't say he should have scored, because it's still a difficult chance to take. But half chances go in. A third of the time, and none of them go in because
we fucking our goalkeeper threw two in last year, and that tells you that's the point.
Yeah.
Is that you just need being world class? Isn't this is the difference between David De Gea and Alisson Becker? Or David De Gea in the last few seasons for Manchester United, it's not being a world class goalie. Isn't picking things out the top bin. It's just doing the simple things right every single time.
Mignolet will pick it out the top in. Mignolet's a really good shot stopper.
Yeah. Remember the carrier save against Newcastle last season?
Mm. Yeah.
His top in as it gets. It's a phenomenal save.
Yeah.
But carrier's throws two in the final.
It's being consistent when you've got nothing to do. You've got that back four in front of you. Don't get past Fabinho, don't have Van Dijk, Matic. When you called upon, be switched on. And carrier's wasn't last season. And the contrast in goalkeepers, well, there's a cut behind it. Yeah, there's a cut behind it.
Yeah.
Because he was man of the match for me. I know Van Dijk was very good, but to make eight saves in the Champions League final, okay, some of them were pretty easy.
Yeah.
But apart from that Dele Alli moment, when they had a chance, I wasn't going, shit, Jesus Christ. Yeah. Apart from that one where we watched it back before, and he rolls it out in front of his...
I think Harry, the first Harry Kane past Harry Kane, he was like, okay, it's fine, everything's fine. No, dead right, I agree. Alisson was my man of the match, because you can't not be, because... All and it was and it's just and it, watching it back, I think it's vindicated. But it was pure emotion for me in the ground, because you're sucked into it, and you're like Spurs through absolutely, four forwards on the pitch basically went for it. They were trying everything in the locker. You've got Danny Rose throwing himself to the floor, Harry Kane's trying to throw himself to the floor. They're trying to do everything, and fair play, because you would try everything in your locker to try and make it happen, and every time. Alisson just got the ball in his two fucking huge hands. A little bit of like my soul was unlocked. Like, you know what I mean? I gained access to happiness that I hadn't been able to feel for, you know, all game, but, you know, 14 years, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
The best thing on the commentary, I think, it wasn't on the SCTV ones, but the BT Sport ones, was 70 odd minutes, and the commentary goes, Harry Kane still waiting for his first chance in the Champions League final. I thought, you know what?
Yeah.
That's fucking down to us doing a good job.
Up your ass, Kane, you fat tongue wanker. speaking of centre forwards and chances.
That's the clip for social media. Not up your ass, Kane, you fat tongue wanker. That's it. Little 2 second clip with a YouTube
watch
link
now on YouTube.
let's talk David Carrigi, because tales of contrasting former strikers. Bobby Firmino, Ben, clearly off it, not a good game for us, you know. But I didn't bat an eyelid when David Carrigi came on. No. I didn't go, oh my God, yeah, is our chances of evaporating out the window? Bobby Firmino's coming off. I was like, yeah, go ahead. Bit of pace, bit of power, bit of height. He was actually crap apart
he's
from
awful.
The fact that he's good.
Misplaced every pass.
Yeah.
But you have, I don't know about everybody else, I'm getting like more and more confident in him that if he gets half a chance, he will at least hit
he's
the target.
He's clinical.
Yeah. So you talk there about half chances. That is a half chance, that goal, and he buries it.
Yeah.
And it's a, you know, it's such a big moment.
Yeah.
And, you know, he comes off, yeah, you're right, he was completely rubbish. But I think obviously, it was clearly the plan from the start, you know, give Firmino an hour, and then it obviously brings Milner on very shortly afterwards, which for Klopp to make two subs by 65 minutes is almost unheard of. Yeah. So I think, basically, I feel like Klopp just basically treated the game as if he had two subs. Yeah. And I think he just this is always the plan. So the Wijnaldum for Milner change was the first sub in his mind, if you like.
We knew that was coming 3 days ago, didn't we?
Yes. Yeah.
We knew if Wijnaldum starts 65 minutes, Milner's replacing.
Yeah. But when the goal goes in, I've never known anything like it in terms of... I celebrated the goal. I don't know about you, particularly in the ground, but it was like I celebrated the goal because you celebrate a goal. And then there was just a few seconds of a delay where it set in where I was like, well... Oh no, we're actually going to do this now. Yeah. There was another wave of emotion coming over it, like 5-10 seconds later. I was like, yes, get in, we've scored. And we're going to win the European Cup, mate. It was like, yeah.
100%, because I said, I haven't felt this. Yeah. You know, because like, the last time I've seen us win a couple of cups, with three actually prior to this with my own eyes, 92, and the two domestic trophies in 2001. But a difference, you know, and because of all the stuff we do around it, it means more. But I've watched Rome away last season, and we got beat, but we won, and it meant you've got a chance in a big game. I hadn't felt that, like, no, this. What does this mean? The meaning of the goal? Yeah, like, holy shit, that's the goal that is going to win us the European Cup.
And you sat there, and obviously we're all hugging each other in the ground. And, you know, I'm trying to look after the phone that I'm trying to film on, and like they're all gathering in the corner because I'm only like 20 rows in the front, so they're all there and they're all doing that, and I'm like, I just don't know what to do. I just can't. This is it. This is it.
The other day, I was just scrolling through Twitter, as I tend to do when I'm bored, and someone had put a thread up of every goal Divock Origi scored for Liverpool. And I think for some reason, we've all been led to believe, apart from the last 6 weeks, that Divock Origi's a bit shit.
Yeah.
Right? We all sort of, every time he comes on, you go, oh, it's fucking Origi. Some of the goals this lad has scored for Liverpool, where he just wraps it right into the top corner.
Yeah.
He's an unbelievable finisher. I think he needs to work on certain parts of his game. I think his link-up play with the rest of the front three will obviously get a bit better if he plays more games.
Yeah.
And that's where he lets himself down.
Well, Adam, I think the reason why Daniel Sturridge starts the season ahead of him in the pecking order is because he does the Bobby Firmino link play better. You know, he's more comfortable dropping deep. He's just a more skillful footballer. He's a better all-round footy player, isn't he? But Origi's just the fact that he can stick the ball in the back of the net makes a big difference. The fact that he can run makes a big difference. The fact that he's over 6 foot makes a big difference. And you're dead right. Origi's frustrations would come from, he'd have a bad game, but he'd score.
Yeah.
Still scoring. Yeah. Having the ability to do that makes a massive difference. There's people who've got, you know, think about all the strikers who are great. They're great for the team. Oh, you know, look at the work. Look what he does for bringing other people into play. It's fine, and you do need those players. But lads, you can score goals are worth money. They're worth loads of money. And last season we had Danny Ings, who's fine, by the way, and Dom Solanke. No one knows whether he's ever going to be a top level footballer. Who scored two goals last season. And Divock Origi's bounced into the European Cup final, having won a Merseyside derby, having won the game against Newcastle, and having won the game against Barcelona in the semi-finals, and then he's gone and won the European Cup. And this is a lad, sorry to keep talking on this, but it is what it is, who should have been the lad who led us to the Europa League four seasons ago, because of injury, was robbed of that, and his career's never got back on track.
Yeah.
He's a lad who should have signed for Wolves in the summer, but he turned it down because he wants to fight for his place. What the fuck, what the fuck is Divock Origi doing fighting for his Liverpool place?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who is he? Shit. What's he doing fighting for Liverpool place?
It's an unbelievable story, and I'm now at the stage where if he doesn't get offered the new deal, which I believe he has now anyway, I think he's got an offer on the table.
Yeah.
If he doesn't sign a new deal, I'll be gutted.
Yeah.
And if you'd have told me that last season, oh, by the way, at the end of the season, lad, if Divock Origi leaves, you'll be absolutely devastated. Well,
moreover, but yeah, rewind it back, mate. If anyone had told you in the summer, Bobby Firmino's going to go off on the hour mark, basically in the Champions League final, and he's going to be replaced by Origi,
you'd be like, feeling.
Yeah, exactly. You'd be going, oh my God, what's happening? Yeah. Is it all going wrong again? Nah, we were in control. We were flexing our muscles.
He's still going to get better as well, because he's still only relatively young. He's just been at Liverpool.
He's only just getting into the prime of his career.
Yeah, he's been in Liverpool for a long time. I think that's why he's a bit of a meme, because he was in and out of the side, wasn't sure of his role, what he was doing, went to Wolfsburg, did poor there because they got relegated and went through, I think it was two managers at the time he was there, didn't set off, and then he's trying to fit him into this Liverpool side. Same with Sturridge, every time we play different because he doesn't suit the role. This season, Divock Origi's found form and a place in the side.
I think the biggest sign that Klopp doesn't think his link-up players up there is that most of the time this season when he's come on, he's played left wing and he's stuck Mane up front because he goes, right, well, Mane is good with the link-up play, so we'll play him central and he can dictate it. But then the last couple of games, he's lashed Origi right through the middle, so maybe that's a sign to come next season. When Firmino's not playing, it's going to be Origi, and then when one of the others isn't playing, I think we're going to see a little bit of Ryan Brewster.
Exactly.
Shaqiri fucking hates him, doesn't he?
Fine, let him.
A year ago, probably around February 2018, I put out a development watch titled Divock Origi Will Never Play for Liverpool Again, because he was doing that badly at Wolfsburg. And I hope that people in the comments now are giving me shit, because I love being wrong. Love being wrong so much.
Bells are being wrong when something turns out so right. Yeah, I completely agree.
With their psychology, Ben, you're trying to dream up.
Yeah, he saw that video and went, fuck you.
Yeah. That brings us nicely onto Jordan Henderson, won't it?
100%. And it's funny because me and my dad were chatting, and he went, I love Jordan Henderson, blah, blah, blah. He went, Adam, who comes in, he fucking hates, he hates Henderson, he gives him all kind, of stick.
Here's the thing, no, right. I still think I was right. I think Jordan Henderson...
Some people have just got that mentality.
Jordan Henderson, the number 8, and Jordan Henderson, the number 6, are different players, completely different players. And as an 8, like he was under Brendan Rodgers, he wasn't the 6 there, he was the right side of a midfield 3, and he was fucking great in that 13-14 season as a young player. And the back half of this season, when he's been played there, he's been allowed to bomb forward a little bit, knowing that one of the best defensive mids now in world football, Fabinho, is just chilling and has got his legs seem to like grow. Yeah. It's like he's got like a selfie stick for a leg. And if the ball's over there, it just keeps going.
Yeah. Stretch arm, someone could stretch his own legs.
Henderson has been absolutely unbelievable the second half of this season. And that game against Barcelona, I've watched the highlights of that game at least 30, 40 times. Yeah. And that's not an exaggeration. I've woke up every morning since then and put it on. And there's been other times where I've gone, oh, let's put it on again.
Yeah.
It's the first thing I've watched every morning since we got through. And there's one moment in it where Barca are about to counter-attack and the ball is running through towards Messi. And Henderson runs from one side of the pitch to the other and just volleys it into the main stand. Just, like, get rid of that. And he outpaces Lionel Messi to do it. I'm very, very happy for Jordan Henderson. And at the start of this year, we were talking about the captaincy. And I said on this show a couple of times, you can't have a captain who isn't in your first 11.
Yeah.
And it's the total opposite now because he's undroppable.
Yeah.
In that role, completely, he's undroppable.
Completely agree. And I think, you know, for all, I think we'd all said, I mean, Ross in the build-up, like, we just wanted this for Henderson. The campaign against him, I think, has been absolutely baffling. And I get what I think Adam has explained it really well, to be honest, is that I think there's some people, though, who saw him in the six and some, yeah, he was fine in that role. He was absolutely fine. Who thought that was all he was. And that's the difference. This is the Jordan Henderson I know and I have seen. We've seen this lad countless times. But recency bias, when you see him, when you see the injured Henderson, who wasn't able to get himself on the pitch, who wasn't able to influence matches, and was playing a more confined role or whatever, or a more selfless role for the team. But I ultimately wanted this for him. He deserves this because, as I say, the abuse that he's taken has been. I mean, abuse. It's all right saying he's not great. It's all right. I don't. No problems with saying he's not world class. Never had an issue with that. No one ever loves Jordan Henderson has ever been saying he's world class. But it's the unfounded, like, he's shit. He's not shit. He's really, really, really good at football. He's actually shown us that he's probably better at football than even his staunchest defenders have thought. And, you know, for the service he's put into this football club, he's played every position pretty much on the pitch for us in that time as well. He's captained the football club. He's lived in Steven Gerrard's shadow. And now he's lifted the European Cup. He's now been to as many European Cup finals as Steven Gerrard. He's lifted as many European Cups as Steven Gerrard. He's the only Englishman to play in a World Cup semi-final and lift the European Cup in the same season, alongside Bobby Charlton. So, you know, he's fantastic, and he deserves all that emotional moment of lifting the trophy.
Yeah, I get what Adam's saying as well. And I just think 13-14 we didn't win, and I think it's we didn't win that because Henson got suspended and missed the last three games, that we ultimately fell apart, and he's getting that form again of 13-14 in that role. I don't think he ever did a shit job at number six, and he was always the scapegoat. Yeah. It's just not a flashy position, whereas now he's moving, you're saying he's bowing forward, he's adding assists, he's adding goals to his game. That's what everyone wanted him to do before, but it wasn't his job. Yeah. Gene Van Aanholt does a very similar job and doesn't get the shit that Jordan Henderson gets. Fabinho gets praise because he's better in that position.
Does more slides, Fabinho, and I'm not criticising Fabinho, I think he's phenomenal, by the way. There's also a degree to which when you're passing sideways and backwards, when your team's got Nathaniel Clyne, Dejan Lovren, Alberto Moreno, Simon Mignolet, Lloris Karius in it, you don't want them players to have the ball. Whereas if you're passing it sideways and backwards now, you're passing it to Trent, Robbo, Van Dijk.
But that was always his job.
Yeah. Exactly what I mean. It's trendier now to pass it sideways and backwards because we actually want Virgil Van Dijk on the ball. Yeah. We want the lads back and sideways. Henderson has been done over by circumstance.
Yeah, but he's had his own faults because if he passes it sideways, he gets shit. If he tried a long ball, which was never very good, that's not an asset of his game to spray long passes.
But it is. It's brilliant at spraying long passes.
Not at a consistent level, like you're comparing to Gerrard before. I was going, he's not done a 70-yard, switch play pass. He doesn't do that. He can play the ball.
I'll be honest, he plays less of them than Gerrard. But he doesn't fuck as many of them up as Steven Gerrard.
Yeah, exactly. So when he doesn't do it, he's passing it sideways to keep the ball because that's his job. And then when he doesn't when he sprays long pass, he gives it away. He's like, what are you doing? You should have passed it sideways. Like, what do you want him to do?
Jürgen Klopp would have had his head done in by Steven Gerrard at times because when you gegenpress and if you give the ball away stupidly, you've undone all the hard work of your team. Yeah. And that's the nature of it.
The thing with Jordan Henderson for me, it was never the passing sideways and backwards that bothered me. I understand that he's given a role by the manager and it's like, do that. It was when people dribbled past them, he would stop and he would let them carry on and go, defenders deal with that. Fabinho doesn't do it. Fabinho will sprint after.
See, I disagree on that. I think he chased back, but Henderson, again, doesn't go. He's not a go-to-ground guy. Yeah, yeah. Fabinho is. And again, the telescopic legs thing helps. Yeah. Jordan Henderson isn't that. He's all about getting a toe in. Lucas was like that as well. And that's why loads of people dislike Lucas Leiva as a DM. Fabinho does it all.
Yeah.
So and he's got Fabinho's got hang your hat on DM moments, and that's boss player bursting past them. It's catching him up and it's going to ground, knocking him for six and getting up and walking away with the ball.
And Henderson's got the ability to come back and help now as well. Yeah. He's such a further forward. He's not the guy you have to get past. He can see an attack happening and go,
we saw it 20 minutes to go and Klopp screamed, changed the formation. We went to sort of 4-4-2, pseudo 4-2-3-1. 4-4-1-1. Either way, Henderson just goes and sits in alongside Fabinho there. Boss.
Go on.
I think what will be nice is we've spoke for years about he's in Gerrard's shadow and he's now lifted the only real major trophy. I know the FA Cup and the League Cup count officially as major trophies. The two we really give a flying fuck about are this one and the league.
Yeah.
And he's now matched Gerrard's haul on those two things. And I think sitting here in this position right now, we can all agree, if by the time he retires, he hasn't added to that, something will have gone horribly wrong.
Yeah. You know what we can say? I think we can say, Ben, now, and there's a wider point to be made about Liverpool in general, I think, with this, is this trophy means you can look back on the things that have gone before positively. So you can say, us losing the Europa League final and us losing the League Cup final against City and us losing the Champions League last year, they were part of a journey to this.
Yeah.
It's like I said, whenever your kids are born, all the mistakes you made in your life, it doesn't matter anymore because it was all the butterfly effect. It was all part of you getting to making this one-off thing that you love loads. And it's like that with Jordan Henderson for me. We can all now look at it. We look at the pictures of Henderson lifting the trophy and kissing the trophy and hugging his dad and crying on the pitch and being cuddled and hugged by every member of Liverpool's playing staff and management team, etc., etc. You can look at what he's been through and you can say, this is a lad who's just been, he's been let down by other people, not him. It's not Jordan Henderson's fault we didn't win the League Cup. It's not Jordan Henderson's fault we didn't win the Europa League, and it's not his fault that we didn't win the Champions League last season. Because if you put him in, if you play him in his best position and you put him in a side with other players who've got the same dedication as him, the same work rate as him, the same, all the passion, all those things, well, what do you get? You get Jordan Henderson, the trophy winning captain.
Yeah. I don't know how much better I can sum it up. I mean, he's obviously just so, When the debates were happening about, you know, whether he's good enough and all that, you know, he's so highly thought of by clearly everybody at the club, but clearly every manager that he's played under, you know, he gets a game pretty much everywhere he goes. Gareth Southgate fucking loves him for England, right?
Yeah, Klopp bloody loves
Jurgen Klopp clearly thinks he's just, in terms of, you know, his work rate, he's everything that a Jurgen Klopp player wants. We praised Adam Lallana for it over Jurgen Klopp's tenure, but obviously Lallana's had his injury problems, hasn't been fit. Jordan Henderson has been fitter than Adam Lallana the majority of the season he's played. And you know what else sums it up for me? The amount of neutral fans that I've had telling me over the last few days, because obviously, like Saturday night in particular, I was getting loads of messages of people I haven't spoke to for months, or sort of saying congratulations as if I've done something. I have not. so many people made up for Jordan Henderson because he's just a likeable guy at the end of the day, you know, and he does work hard and he does play well. And I think most football fans with their head screwed on can see the job that he does and see that he doesn't get enough credit for it. And I had Man United fans saying, you know what, I'm made up for Jordan Henderson because I just look at him.
I look at, we were talking before, like that Dele Alli, and there's something not quite psychologically there to make him the next step just yet anyway, because he might well do. But you look at like your Paul Pogba's, and I look at other footballers, and Liverpool have had plenty of them down the years, Ross, who the trophy makes this a lot easier argument all of a sudden. But I'd have Jordan Henderson all day, because all I ever ask is that lads go out there and give absolutely everything, go out and die for the shirt on the pitch. If you've then got technical ability on top, that's how you become a genuine hit, like club legend, and now you become world class. But the game is littered with these uber talented lads, boys, who if they had half of Jordan Henderson's endeavour, they'd be 10 times the footballer than they are.
I think you saw it with PSG and Barcelona. They've got all these like flashy players and stuff, but you can see it in Henderson's face. Now, he gets angry, does stuff. You mentioned him like twatting the ball at the stand before. He did it at Porto. When Porto got a bit in possession, there was someone right on the byline, and he just twatted the ball at his stomach and put him on the floor. And when you're thinking, you can just see it in his face, that determination, work rate, Ben mentioned it before, of how hard he works. You can't compensate for that. You can be technical. Like Neymar is good technically, but don't put the graft in because he thinks he deserves to win it. Jordan Henderson doesn't think he deserves anything. He works hard to get what he's deserved.
Absolutely. And right, I'm gonna caveat this little next section with, I know that there's fans of other football clubs who watch this channel. You do, because we're the best fan TV channel in the fucking world, and we don't fucking cry arse about everything and all that kind of stuff. So I think that this is going to be the entitlement section, and if you don't get it, if you're not a fan of Liverpool, this is going to sound like we're pricks or whatever. But trust that if you're a fan of another football club and you were in this situation and you treat your team, and you know you're not a Man United fan or a team that wins trophies all the time, I'm going to say this: as fans, I think we deserve this. I think we deserve to see us win the European Cup. It's been 14 years since we've won a major trophy. We've never gone anywhere. We still turn up. We've still been there cheering on. And I think what we've seen as well, Adam, the culture around the fan base as well, when I see the fan park and the boss night stuff, and there's us, and there's the Anfield rap, and there's the Anfield index, and there's This Is Anfield, and there's Paul Tompkins, and there's all these people who are experts in their field in so many other different ways. You've got a hat, scarf, and a badge producing things. You've got Love, Follow, Conquer. You've got Threads to Reds. You've got all these people who are doing these things, and our fan base is back on side. You've got the coach greetings. You've got the songs, the noise, all this thing. And in the face of this fucking horrendous social media banter culture that exists, where we've just been getting dogs abuse for years over it. You've got people who weren't even alive talking about fucking Heysel and talking about Hillsborough and talking about all these things. And for the way we've done it, and you see the parade and you see 750,000 people lining the streets of Liverpool, that's why we deserve that fucking trophy. That's why we deserve to be European champions.
Yeah, I mean, like, in 2005, I was 13 years old, so I remember it fairly well, but I'm still a kid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yesterday, being at that parade and seeing the iconic, and that's a big word, but it fully deserves it, the iconic photography and the video since is, like, I don't think there's another place in the world who would celebrate like this. And
or if there is, you're talking about other clubs who deserve to win just as much as we do.
This is how much it means to everyone in this city. People, like, apparently, I googled yesterday, the official population of Liverpool in 2018, I couldn't find it for 2019, was 489,000. Yeah. There was 750,000 on the streets yesterday. Yeah. So people have come from all over the gaff to
be bearing in mind that if you, even if you're talking about there being more Evertonians of that 480,000, you're still talking, there's probably, let's say 250,000 Evertonians who very much were not on the streets. Like, you know what I mean? So you're only talking, you know, half of that population are red.
Yeah.
And Lowe's was still in fucking Madrid.
Yeah. 50,000 people in Madrid. And half of the population added in the caravans in North Wales, or firmly with the shutters drawn in their houses on the county road.
This is more than a trophy because it dispels so much bollocks about this team. Yeah. This Liverpool team of bottlers, gone. Jurgen Klopp doesn't win things, gone. Oh, one of the greatest Liverpool teams of all time, but the end of the season, empty-handed, gone.
Yeah.
All fucking gone. Yeah. No one can say that anymore. Yeah. Nobody. No one can say Jurgen Klopp doesn't win, because he fucking does.
Yeah.
He's holding the biggest trophy in football.
Yeah.
End of story. It's so much bigger than just winning one title. This could lead to so much more, and this very much feels like the start. You listen to all the players talking after the game. Like, if you look back over recent years, as soon as we got close to stuff like this, we were like, well, we're just going to get pillaged in the summer, aren't we?
Yeah.
But Barcelona are going to come in and take two of our players. Real Madrid will take one. Chelsea or Man City might take one off us. There's not a fucking player in that squad who wants to go anywhere now. Nowhere else in the world are they going to get treated like that. Yeah. And imagine how people like Philip Coutinho feel watching that.
Well, fuck, you know what? I can honestly say, you know, because all the talk this season's been about Manchester City, and we've had this close rivalry with Man City and all that kind of thing. When we won that, and we sort of played, and there's some people who've been referencing it, I didn't think about Man City.
No.
I've not thought about Man City at all. I've not thought about Felipe Coutinho. I've not thought about Luis Suarez. I've not thought about Pixon Gillette. I've not thought about all the people who've left us, and I've not thought about the defeat, and I've not thought about the people who you know, any rivalry and stuff. I was so lost. I've been so lost in this day. You know, I've barely slept for 4 days. I've been to Madrid and back. You know, I've seen it. I've finally seen us win the European Cup with my own eyes. I've got to take my kids to see a European Cup being paraded through the streets of Liverpool. You know, again, 14 years ago was the last time we had one of them. I was bladdered. I was 22 years old, and I was, you know what I mean. And it was a different, it was a different thing, and it was a different time. This is it. This is not. Just let me,
it was for us.
Yeah, exactly. And it was for every, right, vindication for the whole thing. And it's just like one of those situations, in it, Ross, where you let the pictures do the talk and you see how it's being reported. We've got all the papers there, went out and bought them all because it's being recognised. It should be recognised. This is not a thing to be held up against. All the bitterness that still exists, the vitriol still out there, and there might be bits and pieces of it. It's all of a sudden people are shooting us with fucking pea shooters, and we're going, we're fucking giants.
But you're not even champions of England, shut up, lad. We don't want to be.
Yeah. Fucking on your fucking keep bike. It, fucking ants are fine, ants are fine, aren't they? You know, we've seen it, it's a generational thing. We talked about it on the podcast. I had Istanbul. I was grown up for Istanbul, for yous and all you guys.
This is it.
I'm made up that you get to experience it the way that, you know.
That's the other thing, they'll get put to bed. You know, you mentioned social media before, you know, the bottles and stuff, that comes from that younger generation of only, they've missed Istanbul. They've only seen Liverpool losing finals. Well, now they don't have to worry about that, do they?
Yeah.
I think you said, like, we deserve it. It feels more like a reward for us.
Yeah.
The emotions and mental stress we've been put through.
Yeah.
This season alone, and particularly the last 2 months, you know, we said it on the podcast, watching two teams on the podcast last week. I said, I want it for us.
Yeah.
I want it for myself.
Yeah.
I'm being selfish because, like, I feel like I just go, breathe now. I'm gone. It's done. And, it, you know, there's fans that followed this team up and down the country, around Europe, spent loads of money. You mentioned all the, you know, the rap and all them lads and everyone else are going, fucking worked fucking hard this season and been through fucking loads. And they're going, actually, you know, let's wallow in this.
A year ago, I was stood on the stand, in standing in Kiev, and I said, Liverpool need to stop breaking our hearts.
Mm.
We need to get out of the fucking habit of coming close and doing it, because there's a limited well of this, like, this resurgent support, it's going to be harder and harder to pick ourselves up. You know, if you keep getting knocked down, you might have the heart of a fight and you might have a great fucking punch and all that, but if you, you know, eventually it's going to be a TKO if you don't get your act together. And I looked at it, and I looked at, again, the fan park, and I see Jamie Webster's crying on the stage when he's playing Ali, and, you know, the grown men around me in floods of tears in the ground, people on the street of Liverpool, you know, singing and crying and all that kind of stuff. We needed this, and we knew it was coming, but you never genuinely know until it is. And that fear exists in the back of our heads, because when we've had a generation of this now, of us coming close and falling short, what this has done is it's finally put a fucking massive, not a line in the sand, we've just fucking chopped it all off there and gone bang, boom, big fucking wall erected now and gone. We're in this big fucking keep now. We've put a massive fucking brick wall around Liverpool Football Club and the fan base. Jürgen Klopp's got his arms around us and gone, I've got you, Zeal.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny that did cross my mind. About 20 minutes to go, the clock ticks to 70, and I went, well, this is just either going to be amazing or the cruelest fucking thing in the world. And I was looking at it, I was going, it almost gave me confidence in the sense of this life just cannot be this cruel. We've just got to do this now. We cannot go 1-0 up and defend this lead and somehow lose this game, you know, and after last season and all that. And I just felt, it felt like, as I say, this was our time. You know, we discussed about, you know, the players picking themselves up from last season, sort of going into this game with a no excuses attitude. This is something that we have now got to do. And it felt as if we didn't. It felt as us as fans did that as well. You know, we arrived and it was all like, no matter what here, this is it now. Yeah. We again,
there's a professionalism to this. Like,
we're not here for the ride. We're going to do it together. We've got to get this job done. Yeah. And the players did that, and the fans did that, and we all reaped the rewards massively.
And we get to look at it now and we go, 97 points was a phenomenal achievement, and we get to do it without like the, yeah, I know we didn't win anything, who cares, who's fucking arsed, we've got the best team in Europe, the best team in the world, and I have no doubt that we'll be better again next season. Naby Keita is going to be better next season.
Oxlade-Chamberlain is back.
Rhian Brewster, we've got a wonder kid to start bedding in. We've got a team that's played together. Fabinho's going to be his first full proper season. He's going to start the season in the Liverpool midfield. Jordan Henderson's been reborn. He's the captain, he's a European Cup winning captain at Liverpool. He gets to put his name down alongside Emlyn Hughes, Phil Thompson and Steven Gerrard.
And Klopp will let them all touch the This Is Anfield sign.
They can all touch the This Is Anfield sign to their heart's content. All this club's finally earned the right to wear the badge, finally earned the right to wear the shirt, and I would not back
against Liverpool winning their 70 European Cup next season at this stage. No. I make us favourites right now.
We will be. We'll start the season as favourites for the European Cup next season. Tom's buzzing. Tom's head's gone where his voice has gone.
Small matter of a Super Cup and a Charity Shield.
Charity Shield, Super Cup, and potentially, we'll find out on Monday afternoon, a Club World Cup as well. There's going to be a decision being made on and whether that actually happens or not.
Three trophies in three games, please.
Fucking hell. Dear God, I genuinely never thought we'd be back here. You know, when I've said this a few places, when 14, 15 was it, and you know, we got battered everywhere by Stoke, and we were sat here and we watched us get caned everywhere by Stoke, and Gerrard's last game, and I just felt embarrassed. And
that was the lowest, that one.
Yeah, that was the worst.
6-1 by Stoke.
And you know, and that was the 10th year, and that was the 10th anniversary of Istanbul. And I never thought we'd get anywhere near this again, and I am.
We said before,
beyond words, proud of what of this football team.
Five European Cup finals in what 14 years?
Four, five European finals.
One of which is that. That's fucking loads.
Well, let's just look at it this way: since the turn of the century, we went to the UEFA Cup, won the UEFA Cup in 2001, won the Champions League in 2005, lost it in 2007, lost it in 2018, won it in 2009.
You missed...
And lost the Europa League in 2014.
2015.
15, whatever. Yeah. The point is, there's football clubs out there who would who dream. There's fan that we, the vast majority of football fans, can only dream of the things that we've done and seen, and we've not done it by having horrendous investors who have got dodgy backgrounds. And we've not done it with a sugar daddy. We've not done it in any kind of illegitimate way. We've not broken the rules to go about doing it. We've just gone and got the
side eggs there.
Fuck it, no, but fuck it up. But again, this is not about this. This is just to clarify. This is not a dig at Man City fans or Chelsea fans or PSG fans or fucking whatever. No, I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. No, but it's not. It's genuinely not a dig at the fans. It's nothing to do with the fans, because I'd have celebrated trophies just as much if we'd had, you know, Sheikh Mansour owning Liverpool and all that kind of stuff. I would have done. Wouldn't have taken any of the shine off it for me. But the fact that we have done it this way, I didn't think it was possible. I thought we lived the Abramovich era, changed football. And I thought that was going to be the end of us. And I thought, if Jürgen Klopp can't do it, then no one's ever going to be able to do it.
And you've got to give a special shout to Tottenham as well there, because they've done it right, and they got to the European Cup final. They were a game away from sitting there with their fans and doing what we're doing now.
And it's why I said this whole thing about I didn't want Arsenal fans supporting us particularly. I don't mind, and again, I don't mind. I know I've got loads of Arsenal fan mates, and I think, you know, since the millennium, they've been a brilliant football club. I hated them prior to that. But they spent no money this summer. And they get their fans get so much shit because the London banter thing is horrendous, isn't it? Like, you mean, and they've had to live in Arsenal's shadow, and I know they've not won it, but they've come as close as Arsenal have fucking come to it. Yeah. And that Arsenal did it, you know, with Thierry Henry and all that kind of stuff in that side. Spurs have done it that was when they still had money. You know, Spurs have done it without that. And so all the credit, and I thought the Spurs fans were brilliant. Every Spurs fan I saw, and the interaction between the fans, I thought was marvellous over there as well. There was no bitterness, there was no rivalry, or fans having like singing
even
back
after,
and forth.
Even after, yeah.
Incredible. Yeah, absolutely incredible. I don't know what to do with me. Self-care, it's not real. And what I feel like I want to put Jordan Henderson and Trent on the wall or whatever.
We've got to change all these now.
Oh God, we've got to update all the stars on stuff. We've got to, you know what? Look, I mean,
oh,
again,
a nightmare.
No, but look at it.
Consider it arseholes.
No, fuck it. No, but think about it. Like, and this is why the soaking it in thing. Look at that, the picture of Steven Gerrard, the picture of Carragher. So much of the memorabilia in this room, which you won't be able to see off camera, is about Istanbul. The five-star things become, you know, there's companies named after it. You know what I mean? Lack of foresight there, five times, co. You know what I mean? You know, but now I see, and I see Divock Origi and Henderson and Trent. I know, and Alberto Moreno is the new Hoshimi, you know, like celebrating it like he actually had anything to do with it. Like, I see these pictures and it's iconic. It's a thing that will live on forever. These guys have carved their way into Liverpool legend forever and ever and ever. Fucking amen. Gents, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you about
it's been,
this.
It's been fun.
It's been an absolute pleasure. We're going to do it all day.
Turn the camera off and we'll just carry on talking about it.
We're definitely going to do that. Look, it's been our pleasure. It's been our privilege to produce this content for you this season. As I said, we've made this available free for you guys on YouTube because it's too big. It's too important to put it behind a paywall. We want you guys to celebrate in it. You know, we need to talk about, we need this support network around to keep ourselves going and make sure that the smiles are real, to pinch each other and go, this is our life now, Liverpool, champions of Europe. Look, we do this after every single game. Come hell or high water, through the shit times, we were doing this when we had Roy Hodgson in charge and nobody fucking watched, because who wanted to watch content about a Liverpool side managed by Roy Hodgson? But we did it anyway because we believed in it, and here we are. We're here for us and we're here for you. So if you've enjoyed it and you want to subscribe to the RedmenTV.com, please do. Go over there. You'll get a free month to soak up all the reverie. You get to see all the exclusive interviews, all the amazing stuff we've done along the way as well. And you help to make all of this possible. All of our subscribers are genuine heroes to us. We wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't for the people who did dedicate their little bit of their hardcore, hard-earned money every single month. We've done this for you. We love you guys. We love Liverpool Football Club. We love Jürgen Klopp. We love Jordan Henderson. We love being Liverpool fans. We love six times. We love Europe. We love Madrid. Let's talk about six, baby. Guys, thank you very much. Have a fucking wonderful day. Have a wonderful week. So much content coming up for you in the coming days. Drinking in Reds, Liverpool are the champions of Europe.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.